Welcome to Signs of Portents, a War Machine and Horde podcast based out of Buffalo, New York. Today we're here with myself, Bill,
Paul,
and Adam.
And we're going to talk about a little bit of Scorn. First up, though, I want to do a little tournament update for local tournaments in our region. On March 24th at the Collector's End, we have a three-man European-style team tournament run by our very own Adam. He just finished one. Not too long ago, and now this is his next one up, so pretty excited.
Yeah, the format looks pretty fun. It's a variation of the European style, so it should be a lot interesting.
Yeah, and I think Paul and I are going to play on the same team. Since we can't pick up Adam as our third, we're picking up our buddy Pat.
Yep.
So it should be a good time. We'll let you guys know how it goes. On top of that, coming up shortly there after that tournament, we have a big convention in Southern Ontario, the Southern Ontario Open, running from April 6th through the 8th. I believe you can still grab tickets. We've all grabbed our tickets at this point and are ready to go. We'll be staying Friday and Saturday night. I know myself, I plan to play in Champions and Masters. Usually there's also a lot of tomfoolery in there. Some sushi and mango.
Board games.
Yeah, a lot of board games. Less drinking this year, Paul?
Yeah.
I don't drink anymore, but I'm pretty big dude, and Paul and I went drink to drink.
I'd like to enjoy my Sunday this time.
Maybe we'll get to watch the finals this year, Paul.
Yeah.
I'll definitely be drinking.
Wow, you're going to be playing RPGs, too.
Yeah, pretty much the whole time.
Are you playing in Champs?
Maybe.
Maybe. I know Paul is.
Yeah, I'll be playing. Yeah.
Okay. But we're all playing in Masters, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Southern Ontario Open, just so you guys know, Champs is what it is. But every year for Masters, the Southern Ontario Open does something a little bit different in the fact that they have a triad instead. So it's a three-list tournament. So it gives us a little different angle of it. I don't think I'd want to do it for every Masters tournament I'm in, but once a year is not so bad.
Yeah, it's a little different with, it does make it a little weird because it's DNC 1 in Masters with three lists, so that can add a little bit of an extra layer of complexity.
It's six or seven rounds.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, you shouldn't have too many problems with DNC 1.
Yeah, so hopefully that'll go well for us. I'll be bringing some minions. You can guarantee to see Rask as part of it.
With the three man, I'm just not sure how I'm getting everything on one tray.
Well, it depends on how many different theme lists you have at that point. I guess the question there is, will the Manowar theme, the new CID changes be out by then? It might be pushing it.
It'll be close. We'll see what happens.
It won't be as bad as Rick last year. Our buddy Rick had three Merc ADR lists on his tray last year. All with very different themes. His tray was just packed full. I think he may have even had to grab a small second tray for his other stuff, his like supplies and all that.
Well, he's got a super long tray too. It's not.
Oh, it was insane how many models he had on that tray.
Good. So I think those are the tournaments coming up. So that'll be a good time. Like I said, we'll be at all of those tournaments, whether we're running them or not, with it. But so our topic for today, Scorn. We're going to talk about the themes today, but let's first just talk about where we think Scorn's at in the meta so far this year.
Big time Dark Horse, I think.
Dark Horse?
Yeah.
Can you call him a Dark Horse?
I mean, maybe not anymore, but like the past couple of months they've had some good results, but I haven't seen much of them. I know that in other tournaments they've been seeing a lot of play. I just haven't seen too much, but they seem like people are all like always talking about like Grimkin and trolls and all these other things lately that are kind of new cricks, but nobody talks about Scorn, and it's Scorn seems super scary for most factions to deal with.
Yeah, we don't see a ton yet here locally. We have a couple Scorn players, but they're either not playing a ton of games right now or possibly playing different factions, but I wouldn't be surprised if at least one of them goes back and starts playing quite a bit here in the near future with things.
Yeah, I haven't seen any at my tournaments lately. I mean, I've had a pretty good spread so far.
You mean spread of factions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we'll see.
I mean, it is nice, though, that it does feel like most factions are pretty viable at this point. There doesn't feel like there's a ton of dead factions, per se.
Right, I think yeah. Everybody has something.
And I think Scorn has, you know, five theme forces, and they all feel... Sorry, four theme forces, and they all feel very playable and good. Like, you could definitely play any of them with multiple casters.
Well, one of them may not be a multiple caster situation.
Eventually it might be, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, we know that the Exalted theme, which we'll get to here in a minute, is going to be in CID come the summer, so maybe then we'll start seeing it useful to other factions or other casters. Yeah. Right now, maybe not so.
It'll probably pick up, you know, it'll obviously pick up some new units, too. Right now, it doesn't have much of a selection.
Yeah. I think, though, right now, it's Scorn's an interesting place because they kind of have an old Signar feel where there's one list that's extremely, extremely good, and it's kind of the core, and then they're trying to find that second list as to where they want to take it. It might be a situation of that there is no right answers. There's a lot of right answers, and in doing so, kind of leaves the Scorn player up with a bunch of options. So it kind of feels like it's Resheth in our first theme force we're going to talk about, which is Winds of Death, and then what do you want to play with him there? There's definitely a lot of options there. And I think that the core, if you want to be a competitive Scorn player right now, that's a good place to be. You get to know one list really well, and then from there you can work on where you go from there. So I guess that brings us into our first theme list, which is Winds of Death.
Yeah, so Winds of Death, you can take any Scorn Warlock, non-character Warbeast, Venator models and units, Paingiver Beast Handler units, Extoller Solos, Mortithurge Willbreakers, and Scorn Battle Engines. Currently just the one, but it's all you need. You can take...
it's the best one.
You can take a minion solo and minion unit. You for every full 20 points of Battle Engines and Venator models or units, you get to add a Venator Weapon Crew or Scorn Solo for free. Scorn Warbeast gains Swift Hunter. Not great, but it's something. And then before models are deployed, you get to place a wall template anywhere within 20 inches of your table edge, mm-hmm. which is a nice little bunker for your caster, example Resheth, to sit behind for the whole game.
Oh, Tubby. I want to say something about this theme and what we're going to talk about kind of as a whole here. Is it possible that Scorn's Battle Engine is the best? If it's not the best, the second best Battle Engine that exists now after last spring's CID?
It's in the conversation for the best.
I mean, what's better? I can only think of one option that could rival it, and that would be the Convergence's Tep.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Tep, I mean, maybe the Wraith Engine is in that conversation, I think.
What? No.
It makes free models, free incorporeal models, and it's incorporeal itself.
It only makes free incorporeal models when it kills something with living. The problem with it is that it has such limited attacks to it, though.
That's true.
You're talking about the two Battle Engines that I believe are better, and it is possible that the Wraith Engine is third there. With it, but I think the other two are better for the simple fact that they get sheer quantity of attacks.
Yeah, the Animatrix and Tep just kill stuff. They don't support your army any other way.
Yeah, exactly. They're not supporting your army. So real quick before we get into this theme, because this is kind of the crux of this theme in my opinion, is what is the Siege Animatrix and what does it do for this theme? And I think the first caster we're going to talk about is Resheth, and he takes two of these. So the interesting thing about the Siege Animanthrax is that he does count as a beast. And this is important because it does allow you to medicate using your Paingiver Beast Handlers along with being able to poke it for one with it. When you poke this guy, he gains Rage Tokens, which allows him to buy attacks or boost his attacks. Only melee attacks. He does have a ranged weapon, but this is only his melee attacks. But where he gets so many attacks is that he has... three initial melee attacks, And then on top of that, he gets D3+1 range attacks, and he has dual attacks, so every round he could make all those attacks possible. He also has the ability to trample, which is kind of nice. Reposition 3, he is a cavalry model, so that could add to even more melee attacks. And then the gun has double reavers, so he is only rat 5. The gun is range 12, pow 13, but it gains +1 versus medium base models to its attack and damage rolls, and +2 to its attack and damage rolls versus large or huge base models. So we're talking about a pretty big accuracy boost, since you can't boost that itself. Two of the melee attacks, though, are just little spears, but the club tail, okay, is a pow 18 knockdown attack. Mind you, it is a cavalry model, so that charge attack will be boosted. And then when it is boosted and you're knocked down, you can get shot to hell with the double reaver. So there's a lot to it. Also, double reaver is interesting, especially in Resheth, because you can lessen somebody's armor and shoot the crap out of them, and usually stay quite safe. You can stay up to 15 inches away from whatever target you're choosing to fire at. So it's scary.
Yeah, and it's also speed 8, so it has a natural 13-inch melee threat range, which is with its club tail.
And not bad armor behind it. Armor 20 with it, and it does have, and this might be overkill, but it has 30 wounds.
Yeah, at armor 20.
That's a lot of wounds.
Yeah, at armor 20. I guess the question is maybe it could have been armor 19, but it isn't. So here we are with it now.
Why is it speed 8? So,
what's that?
Why is it speed 8?
Because Turtle get on this high-ass horse. And we do have a nickname for it here. We tend to call it the Derp Turtle, though maybe that's not an accurate name since it is so quick.
Rage Turtle is another.
Yep, Rage Turtle is another one. But yeah, Derp Turtle is kind of our standard one here. But nonetheless, we said that the first caster in Winds of Death is Resheth.
Resheth is very strong with this feat, because he is a 8. Fury caster, and it's -2 strength, def, and arm. And when a living model is destroyed in his control range, Resheth can remove 1 damage point. It's pretty powerful as a debuff, especially since he has blood mark, which is a -2 arm already debuff. So it's pretty powerful.
Yeah, so he can use his feet and Bloodmark for a 4 armor swing, and then all of a sudden that Siege Animatrix that's shooting your stuff, if it's a large base or a huge base, is essentially shooting you with pow 19s.
Right, and he can go ahead and Bloodmark pretty easily because he has the ability to arc through friendly faction warrior models, so he can easily go ahead and arc through some slingers or something like that and allow them to unfortunately die in the process, but get that spell out there with ease. So he doesn't really need to put himself into harm's way. He does not have a melee weapon. He's only speed 4, so he's extremely slow because he can't even charge with this makeup, but he does have 20 boxes and impervious flesh, so he's a little bit more survivable than maybe he looks at the surface, especially since he can sit back at Fury 8 and use those things as arc nodes.
Yeah, and another thing, I usually see like a min unit of Venator Slingers with him as the essential arc nodes, but he can also, you know, feet on your caster for -2 defense and arm, and then run have those slingers run up before he activates, and then just put, you know, 2 boosted Breath of Corruptions on your caster that even if they don't hit, as long as they deviate and are still on your caster, they're still pow 12s. With his feet, you know, those are boosted POW 14s, so War Machine casters especially have to be really wary of spending too low on Fury or Fury or Focus and just getting 2 essentially Palpatine Breath of Corruptions to the face.
Yeah, and he can use the Breath of Corruptions also as a general cloud wall with things. Infantry clear, putting out two Breath of Corruptions a turn is pretty strong as well to help out his beasts and such. We tend to see him a lot in Winds of Death with it, and usually with this we have two Siege Animanthrax, a pretty defined battle group to this, where we see one Cyclops Raider. With this we see a Cyclops Shaman, usually sometimes even up to two of those guys. That's, they're pretty strong with this, and then sometimes a second one, and then of course a Basilisk Kriya there too, because you can't really talk about Scorn as a whole without talking about its support pieces. And we really kind of looked at the Paingiver Beast Handlers, but also the Kriya is an important crux to the faction as well, being able to give plus two defense and plus two armor against range attacks is quite huge, especially when somebody like Resheth there has or needs that extra armor sometimes, along with Impervious Flesh, to survive a range onslaught. And then with all the range beasts, that Kriya can really protect those guys as well, the two Shamans and the Raider. Not to mention, those two Shamans and Raiders then get to use the theme benefits too, right?
Yeah, well, and the theme also gives you that wall template. So if Resheth is behind that wall with the Kriya and being protected by the Kriya Animus, he's now essentially defense 16, armor 16 against ranged magic attacks with Impervious Flesh. So it makes him quite survivable.
I've actually seen him with an Agonizer, because on the feat turn plus the whale, it's a minus 4 strength, which is very hard to get through.
Yeah, that's true. If you're going in on those Siege Animantraxes in melee and your minus 4 strength and they're essentially armor 24, you're not really taking those things down.
No. Right. The rest of his list tends to be, besides the Slingers, a max unit of Reavers and their standard and officer. These guys can shoot from 16 up to 16 inches away on mini feet turn and has CRA. They can also get a couple shots in there. Extoller Soul Words to add in some guidance for magic weapons. And Eyeless Sight for your Siege Animanthraxes can be huge. With it, such a spellcaster really relies on making sure his spells land, so he also has a Willbreaker in there a lot of the times as well to get Puppet Master and get those rerolls.
Yeah, one other spell that we haven't touched on yet, though, is Castigate, which is not useful every game, but is pretty backbreaking in some games. I mean, it's a two-cost spell that an enemy models can't be used to channel spells or be forced to cast an Animus while in Resheth's control range of 16. So it can just shut off arc nodes completely, which is obviously great against factions like Krix, but then also, you know, if they can't, you know, can't cast Rage or Slipstream or those kind of Animi in his control range, that's a big deal too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely have to say that this guy is tempting to play, and I should have said this earlier, but somebody on the cast has recently gotten me into Scorn.
Yep.
So my mantra lately has been, I blame Paul. All of a sudden I found myself trading for a large quantity of Scorn. For my birthday, he bought me Morgul 2 and some accoutrements to go with him to basically tell me, here, now you can play a real caster with your Gators.
Maybe next year we'll put up a poll what faction should Paul buy Billy into for his birthday next January.
Crap.
And I think this list, Resheth in Winds of Death, is one of the strongest lists in the game.
It's possible. It certainly feels like, and this is ironic to say for Scorn, it might be the best range list in the game at current. I would have to imagine that's the way it at least feels to me.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has its weaknesses. If you yourself are strong against gunlines, whether it's you know, large amounts of stealth, or sometimes very high defense could make a difference. The turtles can't hit with their rat, you know, even rat 7 if you're high enough defense, in or behind terrain or something. But if you're playing a bunch of infantry or a bunch of, you know, low defense heavies, you're just going to get shot off the board and then charged by 2 Siege Animantraxes when you finally get there.
That's okay, because you have list 2. So, but Resheth is really good in Winds of Death. What other casters maybe can we look at in Winds of Death? Sometimes it's really hard to pass Resheth, especially with his negative 4 armor swing that he can have to it and just shoot things off the table. But there's got to be some others, right?
Yeah. Adam, do you have Jalam?
Yeah, I was thinking Jalam. Actually, I just pulled him up.
Oh, his model's so gorgeous. He also is something that I may want to look at. So my goal for Scorn, by the way, while Adam's pulling up Jalam, my goal for Scorn was to always play Disciples of Agony, but I kind of was thinking, well, maybe it'd be fun to play in a local tournament or something, not serious. And Winds of Death certainly is one of 2 themes that I'm seriously looking at, but I don't want to get too many models. One of the reasons why Winds of Death, though, is one that I'm looking at isn't Resheth, but it is Jalam that Adam's about to let us know about.
All right, so he's actually very interesting. He himself ignores cover and concealment because he has Hunter, and he has Prey, which, is there any other casters that have Prey on their card?
Prey on their card is their own ability? Yeah. Not that I can think of. It's very very unusual.
Yeah. Grimkin kind of gets a pseudo Prey for Heretic, right? But
yeah, but that's for a round, not for the whole game.
No, not for the whole game.
He also has Resourceful, so he upkeeps a spell for free. And does he have 2?
Wait, he upkeeps spells on his battle group for free.
Okay.
All spells on his battle group.
Let's see here. He also has Burst Fire and Grievous Wounds on it, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, his gun's range 12, rate of fire 2, and magical. Pow 10.
But, well, with Burst Fire.
But Pow 12 against huge bases or large bases is excellent.
He also has Grievous Wounds on his blade, which is range 1, Pow 12. He is Mat 7, Rat 7. So with Prey, you get up to 9s.
Yeah, it's pretty gross, actually. He can definitely kill your caster with just his 2... Prey, if like he prays your caster and then shoots you twice with a rat 9 pow 12 or higher if your caster is larger based.
If nothing else, the praying a caster can kind of be a control element.
You have to keep your caster back out of respect for
now. Where he gets really cool though is on the other card.
Yeah, well, his feat is when an enemy model makes an attack roll against a friendly faction model in his control range, any models roll 1 less die.
But it's in his, as long as the Scorn model is in his command range, he doesn't have to catch the enemy models in it, and that's a massive deal for a Fury 6
Oh, it's caster. Bigger than that, too, because one of the best beasts with him is like a pair of Archidons, which
that's true. Are
very difficult not to be in his 24-inch yeah. control range with their extended control. So having that clause in that way is important because you don't have to worry about an opponent being in it, instead just a beast. And those, like I said, 24 inches away from Jalam, it's very likely that they will be in no matter where they tend to be.
He's also got some really cool spells. He has Warpath, which is one of my favorite spells in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because my jacks are slow.
Right.
He has Vanish, which is interesting. It's cost 1, and he can be placed within 3 inches of his current location.
Yeah. Poor man's teleport.
Allows him to shoot and then jump behind terrain or something.
Yeah, that would be pretty interesting. He has Deadeye, which really turned the Reavers on.
They stole my spell.
Yeah, pretty much.
Stole my spell from Signar.
You're getting less of it, they're getting more of it. I think this is fair.
It's not cool.
And then he has Artifice of Deviation, which is a very strong ability, especially in a shooting army.
His upkeep spell, Scavenger's Blessing, is really interesting, too. Giving a model and unit Pathfinder and Prowl. That's, I mean, on something like Reavers that typically don't deal with terrain particularly well, but and then can also hide in forests, putting this on a beast, you know, being able to hide, you know, hide that Archidon or something.
Right, it can make your 13-13s not just killable stats all the time.
Mm-hmm.
With it is definitely a possibility there. The thing with Jalam is, as I said, for a Winds of Death caster, and you have some Reavers, and it was already mentioned, but Deadeye is such a huge deal there. But there, maybe you're not using Warpath as much. But likewise to that, though, I think one of the interesting things about Jalam is that he can be played in two different ways. You can focus on different spells for different purposes. Maybe you're focusing on Reavers, so you're focusing on Scavenger's Blessing and Deadeye to keep him alive, or Artifice Deviation to help keep him alive, depending on what you're facing. But you could easily go with more of a beastie theme as well and stay away from Deadeye as a spell and use things like Warpath as a big deal. Artifice Deviation sometimes can be a big deal, putting down a rough terrain template in there and then really using his feet to your advantage there, and then having him just as a supporting gun in the background saying, yeah, I think I'll shoot over here. At that point, you're really using Resourceful as a big model there. And you may not even need a Gladiator for Pathfinder playing this, because you're definitely going to want to take some Archidons, but you can also give Pathfinder with Scavenger's Blessing to a beast as well, and just upkeep it for free for the rest of the game.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, and he can just take that one beast, you know, if you're not using Deadeye all the time. I mean, even if you just take a Cyclops Raider or a Cyclops Shaman or something, just being able to throw Deadeye out there for a possible four dice to hit when you need it.
Sure.
You know, randomly in a game. Or he probably will take a... I could see him definitely wanting to take, like, a Raider... Or a Cannoneer just for Far Strike for himself as well, making his gun range 16.
Yeah, and if you're taking the beast theme and you're putting all the upkeeps on it, you'll have that extra fury to be able to do that sort of thing. Where maybe if you're using a Deadeye list, it might be a little bit more difficult to justify being able to spend that extra fury on Jalam himself.
Yeah, he seems like he's just got less of a less powerful pure gun line than Rasheth, but he's got a little bit more, you know, movement. He's got movement tools. He's got a lot more, like, tricks in his bag than Rasheth does. A little bit. He can do some different things.
Certainly more accurate.
More accurate, for sure, but, you know, he's not going to lower your armor by four and just blast you off the table like Rasheth will, but...
He will definitely hit you.
Yeah, I mean, and he's going to make it extremely hard for you to kill his things for a turn with his feet.
Yeah, so he definitely seems strong. Like I said, Reavers are definitely a good place for him with Deadeye. They certainly appreciate it with their shots and such. So, not to mention that the feet really helps their survivability as well. I think one of the crux of this guy is definitely the feet. And the survivability that comes behind it. You may not even want to take a bunch of defense 10 beasts with them, the Titans. This is where you might want to put some of the other beasts just for the fact that the feat gets amplified by anything that's above the...
Yeah,
definitely.
For it. Think about a defense 12
those
beasts. Now, if it's rolling one dice against it and it's mat 6, now you have a 1 in 6 chance to hit.
Those defense 14 Archidons.
Yeah, defense 14 Archidons are huge. I think the other thing about this is this theme, or this caster, I mean, may be the reason why we saw Gladiators go down to defense 10.
That's possible, yeah. I could see shoving a bunch of defense 12 one die to hit Titans into someone's face could have been a problem if they thought about that in development.
Exactly. So, but nonetheless, theme looks good. Jalam looks good. Rasheth looks really good with it. I'm sure there's some other casters out there as well, but those are where our minds went first with this theme. But second theme up, we have Imperial Warhost.
Yes, yeah, so you got Scorn Warlocks, non-character war beasts, Pain Giver Beast Handler unit, Willbreaker solos, solos with Battle Group Control special rule, and Scorn Battle Engines again. Ugh. For every 30 points of Scorn War Beasts and Battle Engines, you can add one Agonizer or Basilisk Kraya War Beast free of cost. Which seems pretty strong off the bat.
Oh yeah.
This army could also include minion solos and or one minion solo and one minion unit. And then Scorn War Beasts get hyper aggressive. When a model with hyper aggressive suffers damage from an enemy attack, except while advancing, after the attack is resolved, it can immediately make a full advance directly towards that model. And also, you get 2+ inches of deployment zone.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is an interesting... Yeah, this is an interesting theme. Anytime you're getting extremely expensive stuff like Agonizers and Kreas, you're really talking about a pretty good theme just into itself. Hyper-aggressive is mediocre at best. I think the interesting thing about this for me is this is a 30 points for a free model theme, but they extended it outside of Warbeast and actually said, eh, why not Battle Engines too? Because it's possible that the Siege Animanthrax is the best beast in Scorn.
Best beast, yeah.
Cool. Hey, it has the beast rule.
It does.
So, that might be a possibility, but in this case, really what you're getting is your support for free, or a chunk of your support for free. So it's really meant as the beast list. You still get Pain Giver Beast Handlers so that you can actually run your beast to their fullest extent. And then the question here is what casters may you want to run with this? And I know that I have one that I was looking at.
Well, go ahead. You can start.
Okay. So for me, it is Lord Tyrant Zadesh, or Zadesh 2.
That was my second choice.
That's your second. What's your first choice?
Hexers.
Ah. Hexers 1 or
2?
2. Ooh.
Okay. Xerxes 2.
But... Oh, yeah. Xerxes 2 is the one that I had for number 2, too. Well, let's do Zadesh first here. So we're excited about a bunch of these. Zadesh 2 is a pretty straightforward statted caster. Defense 15, armor 16, mat 7. He has a 2-inch long reach weapon that's powered 12, and he's speed 6 with it. So he has sacrificial pawn to war beasts and flank to war beast in this model's battle group. So he can gain +2 attack to his attack rolls and basically become a weapon master with an additional die to damage there. Sacrificial pawn will help keep him alive with this, with his 16 wounds that he has, since he's kind of a middle of the line statted caster. For him, his spell list, he has battle charge, which gives battle group counter charge. I know Adam's a big fan of that one in Kator with Karchev. He has burning ash, which is a 2-cost cloud effect, and if a living model's within it, you gain -2 to its attack roll, as long as they're not immune to fire. He also has flashing blades, which can go interesting with those flank ability. And then, last but not least, their inviolable resolve. So target friendly faction model unit gains +2 armor and cannot be pushed or slammed. Along with this, though, what makes it so interesting when it comes to this theme for Zadesh, for me, is his feat, and that's friendly faction models gain +2 strength and mat along with defensive strike. And defensive strike basically says that when a model advances into your melee range, you can make a melee attack. So maybe kill a model or knock out, you know, spirit or mind or some sort of system on a jack with it. What's really interesting with him, though, is the beast that he can take in this theme. Specifically, for me, the one that's interesting is the Titan Sentry. Titan Sentry is Mat 6, and he can get Ornery, which means he gets Retaliatory Strike. So he gets Defensive Strike, he whacks you when you come in. You hit him once, he gets pissed off at you, and he whacks you again with his POW 16 Halberd.
Don't forget plus 2 Strength and Mat on the feat turn.
Yeah, and that's true too. The plus 2 Strength and Mat are for rounds, so he'll be Mat 8 and POW 16 with that twice. So, or POW 18, sorry. So if he doesn't knock out something the first time around, it's certainly a chance to knock something out the second time around. With it, you would hope, and Ornery only costs one now, so it actually makes it an affordable animus compared to Mark II, where it wasn't so affordable. And we had a recent list with this that was, again, quite interesting. We had somebody at the Las Vegas Open in Champions, because Zadesh II is a Champions possible caster here. You have Zadesh II, an Agonizer, an Arcanine, two Basilisk Kreas, a Bronzeback Titan, a Titan Gladiator, and his Sentry to go along with it. So now you're also on top of all that armor, all that Retaliatory Strikes, you're adding in the Agonizer's bonuses as well. Two Siege Animanthrax, a Mist Speaker, and then, of course, your Pain Giver Beast Handlers as well. So this is what we're seeing for this type of list here.
Have you talked about the Siege Animantrax interaction with his feet?
What was that?
The Siege Animantrax interaction with Zadesh's feet.
What interaction with his feet?
So the Siege Animantrax has knockdown on his club tail that is range 2. And
oh, because it's not battle group, it's friendly faction model, and oh, good God.
Yes, so you get so the Siege Animantrax becomes Mat 8, POW 20 on his feet turn, and if with Defensive Strike. So if you end your movement in the Siege Animantrax's melee range, it hits you at Mat 8, POW 20, and immediately knocks you down, and your activation is probably over.
Wow. I have to imagine with this in as well that you're probably playing these pieces aggressive and basically tempting your opponent to say, hey, can you kill any of my stuff with my stuff in your face with all of this? I'm basically going to play on your turn.
I mean, there's very few models with that Siege Animantrax interaction that can really go in and make attacks that are don't immediately end their activation. I mean, you can go in with Colossals, for example, or Gargantuans. That'll do it. There's a handful of beasts and things that are steady, and obviously units, you know, charging that thing don't really care. I mean, he'll defensive strike one guy, but if you're sending in the average heavy on feet turn, good luck. You're just going to get knocked down and then immediately killed on the Scorn player's turn.
Yeah, that seems pretty strong. Along with that, yeah, that's just ridiculous. I don't even know what to say.
And there's probably two of them.
That's a lot of play on your opponent's turn. Between Counter Charge and Defensive Strike and Ornery from your one beast there, it's gotta watch out for that stuff.
Don't forget to flip your clock back.
Yeah, that list you just talked about had a bronze back too, so that guy can also be sitting. He's got Counter Charge, so he can be sitting behind a cloud wall. Even though he won't get the Defensive Strike, he can Counter Charge something, and that's better, arguably, than a Defensive Strike, obviously.
They all have Counter Charge in this list.
Oh, that's true. He just has Battle Charge, so...
Yeah, I'm actually not 100% sure if I love...
I think it's more for the Fury management in that list, just because the Bronzeback removes one Fury point from any Titan that the Bronzeback... that the Titan ends in the Bronzeback's control area. So I think that's maybe why it's... there. He also just has a ton of attacks too, because he's Fury 5 with Grab and Smash.
Yeah, and it's possible that if I was building this list, I may not take the bronze back and try to go with two min units of handlers instead, as a possibility.
Yeah, spread out the... Because their command range is really small, isn't it?
Yes, they have a small range, but also what that allows you to do is have two units for scoring. Purpose is two, not instead of just one. I'm a huge fan of building lists with at least two men unit or at least two units of some sort. I very, very, very much dislike running less than that. I know Paul has been doing that in Grimken lately and says it's not so bad, but every time I try with like Rask or something, I just feel naked.
Yeah, when your units are support units like this, it's not so bad because they serve a purpose. It's rough taking units sometimes when they just literally don't do anything and they have victim stats.
Yeah. All right. And then what other caster did we want to say? Are we going with Xerxes 2 or Hexerus? Though it is possible Hexerus would also be good in other themes.
Well,
Hexerus 2, right?
Yeah. The only thing to mention about Xerxes, I think, Xerxes 2, is that, first of all, you get to play Rhino Xerxes, and that's awesome. His model is so cool. But his Field Marshal is one of the best in the game and just gives your battle group plus 2 speed. So you have 18-inch running Arcadons, Speed 9 Arcadons, Speed 8 natural Basilisk Drakes, for example. That's really all I wanted to say about him, is he just speeds things up to ridiculous levels, especially with the plus 2 inches of deployment zone. He can be well across the midline with Arcanons on turn one.
Anytime you buff the base stats, we've said it on here before, and our name kind of gives that aspect away. Anytime you buff the base stats in this game, you're never going wrong with it. So as long as you're doing something with Matt, strength, rat, speed, it's likely to be a good day.
Yeah, and at least on his feet turn, that 10-inch control area doesn't hold him back, especially with Arcanons, since they have extended control range. But on his feet turn, everything, all of his models are considered in his control range, so he can really spread out, load things up with Fury if he wants to get a massive alpha strike in. And those Arcanons have sprint... or can have lightning strike, so they can sprint away at speed 9.
And the best part is, for one turn, they get pseudo
signs importance. Yeah.
So spray the world, Drake. Spray the world.
Yeah, Drakes get to spray the world, and Arcanons get to hit hard and sprint away.
So, Paul, have I told you lately I blame you?
Yeah, I know you're eyeing this one up.
Yeah. I the last time I actually tried some Scorn out, it was playing some Rhino Xerxes with it. So I guess I have a place in my heart for him.
It's a sweet model, too.
All right. So are you going with Naresh?
Yeah. First of all, I think it's the Field Marshal pain response that got me going.
Why don't you go through all of them?
Yeah. So... he's speed 6, math 7, and then he has 2 power 11 weapons. Each of them range 1. He has defense 15, arm 15, tough. Yes, so he also has blood trade. This model can upkeep spells by suffering 1 damage point instead of spending fury. He has field marshal pain response. War beasts in this model gain field pain response. While damaged, a model with pain response can charge or make power attacks without being forced. He has...
hyper regeneration? Flagellant?
Yeah, flagellant. Yeah.
Okay. This model is all automatically hit by melee attacks made by friendly models. That'll become important in a second here. He has hyper regeneration. Remove 3/3 damage points from this model at the start of his activation. And he has painmonger. When this model suffers damage from an attack, gains 1 blood token. For each blood token on this model, it gains plus 1 strength, arm, and can have up to 5 blood tokens at a time. Remove all blood tokens from this model at the start of your control phase. So with Flagellant, you hit him with a whole bunch of Taskmasters and get him up to that blood token 5 real quick, so you've got plus 5 strength and arm, which is pretty important. He has Combo Strike, and he has Life Drinker.
destroys the living enemy model, a heal D3. He also has bleed, which is more healing for him. So you whack him a lot, you damage, and then you heal yourself back up. He has blur for either himself or a friendly unit. He has cyclone to movement shenanigans. And he has lamentation. When an enemy model casts a spell in the spell caster's control range, double the cost. Additionally, enemy models must pay double to upkeep their spells. It's pretty strong so far. And then his feet immediately apply up to one damage point for each aspect of living war beast in his battle group that are in his control range. Naresh can remove one damage point for each damage point applied as a result. Additionally, while in Naresh's control range, living war beasts in his battle group gain plus one strength and arm for each of the damage aspects. So basically you do 3 damage and you can get plus 3 arm and strength on your war beast.
Yep. Yep, he's definitely interesting. Survivability is definitely one of his strong suits. There and what he's looking for. The big thing with him though is beast handlers are huge, not only for supporting his beast, but sadly supporting him too. Unless you're going for the kill, 5 a turn might be a little overkill if you're just looking for a little added protection. But when you're ready to go for that kill, it's definitely something that's strong there. And I could see him playing in this theme quite well. I think also him playing in Disciples of Agony is also a good possibility. The big thing with him for me is that he might turn on some lesser beasts that you might not see all the time, like a Rhinodon or the Archidon. Though Archidons you see quite often, but the Rhinodon, with it, cheap, easy to spam, can really get in there and do some extra damage with that feat there. So definitely pretty strong.
I've seen people run a lot of Cyclops Savages with him.
Yep. Cyclops Savages are definitely strong. Get in there. I think maybe playing the Savages with Disciples of Agony too. But remember, with all of this, we're talking about a survivability factor with that extra armor. And the fact that you can use Agonizers for gnawing pain and give models negative 2 strength is really go a long way, along with the plus 3 armor that you get for survivability.
Yeah,
so I think both of these are very, very strong, or all three of in this theme. Next up for themes, we have Masters of War. This is a pretty interesting one, and a lot of people have been talking about this one after the theme Apocalypse that came out this fall. So this theme, Masters of War, allows for Scorn Warlocks, non-character war beasts without a ranged weapon, Tibbers, Basilisk, Kreas, Cataphracts models, units, Praetorian models and units, Paingiver beast handlers because it's Scorn, Tyrant Commander, Extoller solos, and Willbreaker solos. Okay, you can take a minion's solo or unit along with this. They do count as Scorn. For every 20 points of Cataphracts or Praetorian models, you get a free Scorn attachment or Tyrant Commander for free, and that's huge there for the Tyrant Commander for free. Also, they will basically get a variety of takedown, all of those infantry units. So every model that's disabled by a Scorn Warrior model cannot make a tough roll and is removed from play. And then why not? I have all these units. I'm going to be screaming at you across the board. You get 1 to your starting roll at the start of the game. So pretty good benefits there. Really good with the RFP that is allowed there. It is not specific to living or undead, which is a huge, huge benefit to this. And then there's probably 2 casters that I think you'll see in this theme the most often, and I believe Paul has the first one that he'd like to talk about.
So the first one used to be much more common, is Makeda 2. Makeda 2, speed 6, strength 7, mat 7, defense 15, armor 16, and command 10. Her command stat is pretty important. She has elite cadre for Praetorian Swordsmen, so Praetorian Swordsmen models gain Vengeance, which is, you know, fine. Her big ability is Stay Death. When a friendly living non-warlock faction warrior model in her command range of 10 is disabled, this model can spend one fury point to remove one damage point from the disabled model, and she's fury 6. So theoretically, she can spend 6 fury over the course of a turn to keep 6 models from being destroyed. And it can be the same model over and over again if she wants it to. For spells, she has dash, cost 2. Spellcaster and friendly faction warrior models activating in her control range get plus 1 speed. They also gain parry. Deflection, while in the spellcaster's control range, friendly faction models get plus 2 defense against range and magic attacks. That's cost 3. Prostration, not going to see your casts too often, but it's ranged, cost 2, range 8, POW 12 nuke, and the model hit becomes knocked down. Storm Rager, target friendly faction warrior model gets plus 2 strength, mat, and arm, and cannot be targeted by combined ranged attacks or combined melee attacks. That's a pretty popular one for her to just put on herself or on Tyrant Radim. And then her feet, while in her control area, friendly faction models gain boosted melee attack rolls and cannot become knocked down. Instruments of War last for a round. So what she's going to do is take 1 to 2 units of Ferox, and then maybe you might see a unit of Citrati, maybe some swordsmen. Usually the 2 units of Ferox are the core of the list. And Ferox are speed 8, so they're extremely fast. They have jump, so they can be placed within 5 inches. Reposition 3, and they are also steady with a 13-17 stat line and 5 boxes. So 13-17 already pretty good defensive stats with 5 boxes, but also steady.
Deflection,
you can, you know, make them defense 15 against range and magic attacks. They have range 2 cavalry spears that are POW 12, and they get plus 2 to charge attack and damage rolls with that weapon. The mount, when it jumps, the mount damage rolls that are POW 12 are automatically boosted. So they don't even necessarily have to charge. They can just advance 8 and then jump 5 and attack within 5 inches, still get the boosted POW 12. And then they have reposition for that 3-inch reposition. She's going to take them because they are extremely high-value stay-death targets, but also because with the solo Tyrant Radim, who's their 10-box, speed 8, 13-17 Ferox Dragoon solo, he has dodge. He also has jump. While in his command range of 10, friendly Ferox models gain dodge. So if you're keeping track, these models have dodge and steady. And then he also has reposition 3 and steady, and a magical POW 12 armor-piercing star attack. So he has pretty good damage output himself. And then the last thing to put together the puzzle is the Mortithurge Willbreaker. That can be a free solo, I believe, in this list. He has speed 6, 13-13, a support piece, 5 boxes. His magic ability 7, he can either cast Influence, Puppet Master, but the one he's going to use a lot in this list is Flesh Hardening, that gives a friendly living warrior model unit tough and continuous effects on them expire. So this guy is going to go make a unit of Ferox tough, and then Radim gives them dodge in his control range, and they are also steady. So you make attacks against the Ferox, and if you hit them, or if you miss them, they get to dodge away. If you hit them and kill them, they will make a tough check. If they pass that, they are not knocked down because of steady. If they fail the tough check, Makeda can then spend a fury to keep that Ferox alive. And sure, she can do that over and over again as long as she has fury to do it.
And they're within 10 inches.
And they're within 10 inches of her. So they are super hard to get a hold of. Very hard to, you know, if you miss, it's bad for you. If you hit, it's potentially bad for you. It's just a nasty little, really hard to kill list. And it's also extremely fast.
Yep. And then if you just choose to attack the other unit that they're taking, which is usually swordsmen, they'll just get vengeance. So yeah, you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't.
It could also be Citrati, who in shield wall can just be really high armor, so you might not even punch through their armor, and then she can stay death when you do.
Speaking of Citrati, I was looking up their attachment, and he gives them Sacred Ward.
Yep.
And Tactics Steady. So a lot of those, you can't debuff them with spells, that armor.
No, and you can also do the same thing with the Willbreaker. When they have steady, give them tough, and they become tough, no knockdown.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely a lot of options with this caster, and she just turns the Ferox up to 10, getting up to 16 inches with their threat range.
Yeah.
As well, and possibly having a fully boosted kit, too. They fully boost the attack on the melee attack roll, and then full damage boosted on the jump after the jump attack as well. So
there's definitely some things she doesn't want to see. Anything that has a lot of grievous wounds kind of stops everything she wants to do.
I don't know what Malak's talking about.
Yeah, mortality is like her least favorite spell in the game. She also, if you can get her to spend down fury, she can be killed herself. You know, if she's spending that fury to stay death, then that's less transfers, so sometimes you can get to her. I've also seen her just be overwhelmed by number of attacks, like things like electroleaps, like Nemo 3. Just electroleaping into everything over and over again can burn through her stay deaths and, you know, eventually start killing models.
Right. Kind of a situation of how you had to deal with Harbinger all the time, too. Yeah, martyrdom is...
right. Volume of attacks can punch through it, but she's a little different than Harbinger just because these models might be a little higher defense naturally than some of Harbinger's models.
Sometimes, yeah.
And the speed.
It's also faster than a lot of Harbinger lists.
And the hit and run with reposition, so...
Which I really like, the jump, you know, it doesn't trigger things like countercharge. Yeah. Or defensive strike.
Right, so there's definitely a lot of movement shenanigans like that, yeah. Definitely a lot of movement shenanigans. Second caster for this, in my opinion, would be Makeda 1. Okay, so actually Masters of War is the theme box for Scorn, or the starter box for Scorn. And she is quite good with pretty much anything in this theme. She's speed 6, mat 7, defense 15, armor 16, and she has 2 POW 12 weapons. She can get stronger, any enemy model destroyed, with the melee attack during its activation, she can get a cumulative plus 1, for it with her Blood Quenched ability. She is... Field Marshal, Shield Guard, and Sidestep as well. But where she starts to become interesting is on her spell card and her feet. She has Carnage to turn on things a little bit more. Jackhammer to really get that beast extension out there and beating on things. And then Lash along with Quicken. And Quicken is huge as a defensive ability versus range and magic attacks, along with speeding up things. With it. Her feet, though, is really, in my opinion, where it shines. All living models gain retaliatory strike. When a friendly living warrior model in this model's controlled range is disabled, this model can suffer 1 damage point and remove 1 damage point from a disabled model. So she can really keep a strong defense up with these infantry models. And I think with her, you might still see Ferox, maybe not in 2 units because she doesn't do as much with them, but she certainly does a ton with her swordsmen. So swordsmen really like this theme and what they can do with it. So it's also interesting because she can keep things alive to go ahead and take that retaliatory strike as well.
Yeah, Citrati seemed like another pretty good fit. Yeah, retaliatory strike weapon masters.
Certainly. Of course, the cataphracts as a whole are hurt a little bit by dropping down to 5 wounds. They don't have a way to get up to 8 wounds, which is kind of tough for them. But yeah, it's certainly a possibility for them here. Like I said, though, I think with Makeda 1, a lot of what she does relies on that feet turn and where you're going with that feet turn. So
her mullet karn is also pretty gross.
Yes. Yeah, her mullet karn is extremely gross, especially with quicken.
With quicken, speed 8, defense 15, armor 20.
Yeah.
Potentially with a Kriya standing behind him too, so he's just unhittable with guns and magic and
come at me, bro.
Yeah, well, and then also she can, you know, he's speed 8 with sidestep with her. POW 14 weapon master, probably more like POW 16 with beast handlers, and then she can also, if she, assuming she can get into range, she can jackhammer him for even more.
Jeez.
Even more fun.
Yeah, she really turns him on.
Yeah, I think you're always going to see Mullet Karn with this Makeda. You might not see him with Makeda 2, you probably still would, but you're pretty much always going to see Mullet Karn with Makeda 1.
Yeah, why not? So, nonetheless, I think there's a lot of options there, and we can go on. There's several other casters, Xerxes 1 and such, that could do very, very good with this theme. So let's move on to the Exalted. I think we're only going to talk about one caster with the Exalted, because there's probably only a reason to talk about one caster with the Exalted. I know this is one that I'm excited about. This is one that Paul's excited about. And I don't know, Adam, are you excited about this one?
This is the coolest one.
This is awesome. Whoa. The last one might be the come on.
No. Giant stone men is our way better.
This one is, it's a lot of fun to look at.
So, Paul, do you want to read this one?
Okay, so you can take Scorn Warlocks, non-character Warbeasts, Exalted models and units, Extoller models and units, Paingiver Beast Handlers, and Void Spirit solos. You can also include a minion solo or unit. For every full 20 points of Exalted models or units, you can add a command attachment or Scorn solo for free. Warbeasts in the army gain Death Rage, so when a model with Death Rage is disabled by enemy attack, it can immediately advance up to 3 inches, then make a melee attack, and then it gets removed from play. You ignore crippled aspects when making that attack, and you can't be targeted by free strikes during that 3-inch movement. And then every model in the army with Soul Taker begins the game with a soul. And the caster that you're going to see this with most often, at least currently, is Zol 2.
I agree.
Yeah, and this is also one that's interesting because we know, or we have information, right, that's out there saying that this is going to be Scorn's next CID update, probably sometime in the summer or so. So it could get expanded from here and maybe use more casters, but for now, really, I think the only caster that is extremely competitive with this is Zol 2.
So, Zol 2 is Fury 7, Speed 5, Strength 8, Mat 6. His rat doesn't matter. defense 10, Armor 18. He's a construct. He's a Range 2 POW 14 melee weapon. His ability is Direct Spirits. This is a big one. So, when a friendly living faction warrior model is destroyed in his control range and generates a soul token, you choose which model with Soul Taker gains those destroyed models' souls, regardless of proximity of other models. And then enemy models are not eligible to gain soul tokens from models destroyed in his control range. So he denies your opponent's souls and then gets to pass out souls however he wants to his different ancestral guardians, command attachments on his immortals. He could take them himself. He could hand them out to Hakkar.
Poop handlers.
Extoller Soul Wards. Poop handlers, as they're known sometimes. So he has Righteous Vengeance. If one or more friendly faction warrior models were destroyed or removed from play by any attacks while within 5 inches of this model, during your maintenance phase, this model can advance up to 3 inches and make a basic melee attack. He's kind of slow, so a 3-inch advance helps. And then Soul Taker reclaims, so he can gain souls. And then when a friendly living faction warrior model is destroyed by a continuous effect, an enemy attack, or collateral damage while in his control range, he gets to gain the soul token. But as mentioned, with direct spirits, he can kind of instead have other models gain that soul. And then after he leeches Fury, he replaces each soul token with a Fury point. So
scary.
He's going to pass souls all over the place, and potentially, if his stuff dies, sit on a massive stack of souls that turn into Fury, which is relevant for his spell list, which includes Annihilation, which is a 4-inch or a 4-cost AoE, 3 POW 10. Models hit suffer a POW 10, and they're removed from play when destroyed.
That's pretty big, actually.
Right. So he does have access to remove from play. Aura of Power, upkeep, cost 2, range control. While in his control range, friendly faction non-warlock warrior models can spend a Fury point on the spellcaster to boost a melee attack or damage roll. So you can make his immortals essentially get to boost even after they can't really charge anymore. So it ups their damage output, potentially, ability to hit. So Mage Sight, put a 5-inch AoE completely within his control range. While within the AoE, models and spellcaster's battle group ignore forest and cloud effects when drawing line of sight to it and ignore stealth. This is most relevant because of his next spell, Sunder Spirit, cost 2, range 10, POW 12. Enemy Warbeast damaged by Sunder Spirit loses its animus. Mage Sight and Sunder Spirit are kind of hilarious. I remember watching a WTC game where a Krix player destroyed almost 3 units of Immortals in one turn with Denegra 1, and Zal got almost 20 souls. He had 23 Fury at the start of the turn, and Denegra obviously has stealth, but Zal walked up, dropped a Mage Sight on her, and then put a whole load of fully boosted Sunder Spirits in her, and she died.
Oh yeah. And then on top of that, a lot of times Zal's battle group tends to be shamans and raiders and stuff to take advantage of Mage Sight as well, or to add to that.
Yeah, add some guns to back that up.
Because he doesn't need more melee. He already has that in the Immortals and his Ancestral Guardian models. So.
His last spell is Vision. When target friendly faction model is directly hit by an attack, you can choose it to suffer no damage from the attack. Then Vision expires. It's a cost 2 upkeep. His feat, remove d6 plus 3 damage points from each friendly faction construct model in Zal's control range. While in Zal's control range, friendly faction construct models gain plus 5 armor. And there's currently no construct war beasts, but I would expect that to change with the CID, I would think.
It would be interesting to get another faction with a construct war beast outside a circle.
Yeah, but it does make his immortals armor 22. When they're moving up the board for a round.
Right.
Yeah, I got to play into this with Sorsha 1, and at the time I was running out of theme and a whole bunch of low-pow guns, and it did not go well.
Even though you made him stationary for a turn, it still didn't go well?
Yeah, I basically, time-walked, basically, because he couldn't move in, but I just couldn't kill any of his people. It was bad.
Yeah, and as far as his list is going to go, he's going to take 3 units of Immortals with their UA. He's going to take... he's going to get, Hakkar for free, probably, 2 Ancestral Guardians for free, maybe pay for another Ancestral Guardian, some Extolar Soul Wards, and then some Beasts. And he's going to run across the board with some kind of slow immortals, but that are extremely hard to kill because of his feet. The immortals themselves have vengeance, so if you do kill one or two of them, they're going to get closer, and then they're going to hit you with magical range 2 POW 13s that can spend his fury to boost.
Well, and they also get sped up by the presence of Ancestral Guardians, too, so...
Right. Right, so they do get a little bit faster. It's deceptively fast, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they have reach, and they go up to speed 6 with the... as long as they're within 5 inches of an ancestral guardian. So with that in mind, they could get up to speed 11, or charge at 11. So
that's yeah.
not amazing, but it's not miserable.
Yeah, and Hakkar has veteran leaders, so they can be... you know, Mat 7 naturally in his command range.
You know, with Mage Sight, they can charge their cloud walls, but also when the Extolar Advocate gives them, what is it, Spirit Walker, they can go incorporeal and charge through a forest.
Who can charge through cloud walls?
Mage Sight only benefits his battle group, yeah. So that that won't work.
Oh, I meant that wrong.
Only for him and his Cyclops is he's
never mind.
But they can get they can essentially ignore terrain though with and even charge through models with the Extolar Advocate ability. I mean, and the important thing too is that those Extolar Advocates start with a soul due to the theme benefit, so at the very least once per game they get to use one of their abilities either to grant a reroll or give the unit concealment and +2 defense against melee attacks or give them incorporeal. And actually Grave Mist Immortals is pretty obnoxious, especially on their feet turn or on Zal's feet turn, because that makes them go up to defense 13 either in melee or against guns and at potential armor 22. It's pretty hard to kill.
Also, the Vengeance helps them with their speed.
Yeah, Vengeance really helps, too.
Oh, certainly. I mean, that's the scary part, right? Just like any Vengeance unit, you have to decide if you're going to go for a bunch of them or not. But then the question is can you even get a bunch of them on defeat turn?
Well, yeah, on his feet turn, he puts you in that spot where you can maybe put some decent attacks to kill a couple, but do you really want to when you're going to kill maybe one or two guys and grant them Vengeance?
Right. You know, because maybe the greatest thing you have against them is the lack of speed that they have, so...
Right. It's a very resilient list that moves faster than you think and hits pretty hard, and it looks awesome, by the way.
Yes, well, that too. No, yeah.
And it'll only get stronger if he gets access to some construct beasts that are probably would be armor 18 base at the very least, so on his feet turn get up to armor, you know, 23.
Right. My only problem with it is that I feel like if you're going to build this theme list because of what it's asking, and you really have to like this theme list. You can't be like, I'm going to do this halfway. It's not like some of the beast theme lists where you're going to use those beasts elsewhere. Like, you're all in if you're going with three immortals. This is it.
It seems worth it.
it's very themey, but also, I've seen some really cool paint jobs.
And they paint up quick, too. True. They can look really good painted up relatively quick in this theme.
So for my next birthday, Paul's going to buy me immortals, and then he's going to borrow them.
I'm
going to
buy myself immortals, and you can borrow them.
Wait, so we're both going to own half a Scorn faction?
Yeah.
Okay. This seems like it's going to work out well.
I think we need to buy Bill Crucible Guard next time.
No.
Yes.
No.
New faction every year, Bill.
No.
I'll get you some Convergence next year.
Maybe. No. Right. I already don't play one of my factions. I don't play my circle.
Well, okay, so this is... You might see this theme force was all one as well, but...
It's all one. I think Xerxes 1 is also a possibility with it, but I think you're lacking things compared to where you're getting or what you're getting from Zal 2.
Yeah, Zal 2 just does everything that immortals want to do.
Yeah.
I think.
So, all right. And then our last theme, and this is the one that Paul basically purchased me into. So, the last theme is Disciples of Agony. Adam?
Yeah, so Pain Giver Warlocks, Master Naresh, non-character war beasts. What is that?
Mortithurge.
Is that how you say it?
Oh boy. Willbreakers. It's just okay. Willbreakers.
Willbreaker models.
Maybe in the future.
Annihilator models and Pain Giver models. So, and what they get from this, the army can include one minion solo and any number of minion units that will work for Scorn. In addition, this army can include any number of non-character minion war beasts. These models can be included even if they have the Partisan Scorn special rule. Minion units in this army can include attachments. Scorn warlocks in this army can control non-character minion war beasts. In this army, controlled by Scorn warlocks, considered to be Scorn war beasts instead of minions. For every full 20 points of units in this army, you can add one Scorn command attachment or small base Scorn solo to the army free of cost. Pain Giver models in this army gain Sacrificial Pawn, Minion Warrior model. When a model with Sacrificial Pawn is directly hit by an enemy range attack, you can have one friendly non-incorporeal Minion Warrior model within three directly hit instead. One Pain Giver Blood Runner unit in this army gains Ambush.
Beautiful. So, what do we think?
Well, the key is, in that first clause, is that you can include any number of minion units, where usually you can only take, like, one in Theme Forces, and then you can also take minion war beasts on your casters.
Yeah, so that's considerably different for sure with it. And then the interesting thing about this theme, though, is it opens up a whole new world to basically playing the minion faction with this theme, and there's some models here that support the minion faction. The problem is that there's only five warcasters that you can play with this. So you have Morgul 1, Morgul 2, Morgul 3, Zakar, and Naresh. And that's it. That's all you get. So it's very restrictive in that mindset, but very open in what you can do with it. Basically, you've doubled the amount of beasts that you could throw down with this list there. So the question is what do we think the strongest caster for this list is? And I think that might be what Paul purchased me. Morgul 2.
Yeah. Do you want to
go
over Morgul?
I've been, scheming a lot of Morgul 2 lately. Morgul 2 feels like your quintessential pop and drop caster. All Morguls are speed 7. This one's defense 16, armor 14, so a little weak on the armor, but he does have stealth and Pathfinder and mat 8. He comes with two different weapons. One's a little sword named Mercy, which is a blessed magical weapon master, POW 13 sword. And he has a fan of shadows, which blinds your opponent. Mercy also has grievous wounds, and he gives Bloodrunner models that he's playing with parry with it. He also gets apparition at the beginning of your troll phase. He can move 2 inches, and he's steady, which is a big deal when you're defense 16 caster. He has flashing blades with his really sweet mercy weapon. Of course, it is only 1 inch, so you have to watch out there. He has flesh hooks. Damage by flesh hooks can charge or make, or sorry, models with damage by flesh hooks can make slam, charge, or trample power attacks. He has mortality. We talked about mortality being really good against Scorn. Well, looky here. Here it is again. And we'll say why that's such an important deal with him. And then he has Shadow Play, which is target-friendly faction model gains incorporeal this turn. So not round, this turn. During your control phase, the affected model gains incorporeal for one turn. Not round again. So basically, it's a movement trick to be able to move through stuff, but not allow you to keep it as a defensive trick. Along with this, he has a feat. This is where the pop and drop comes into play. He is a Fury 6 caster, so a 12-inch control area. And within that control area, he makes models blind if he can see them. So kind of very similar to Sorsha 1. They can go ahead and blind models if he sees them within his control range to it. So this can go really well with shooty units. With this in mind, mortality is really strong. What this theme brings Morgul and why you're not seeing him elsewhere is Scorn doesn't actually have an arc node, but in this they can play the blind walker. The blind walker can move up, trample, charge, whatever, and then use its animus to become an arc node for Morgul. So we can get those mortalities out quite easily with it. And then from there, I think the question is what units do you want to play with him? And I see some people online playing brigands. I decided in my build to take it a little further, and instead of brigands, play one unit of brigands, one unit of blood runners to get ambush, and two units of crow creators to go along with this. The reason for this is that the pain giver taskmaster is a key piece to the list here. It gives minions within 7 inches no knockdown. It can give them +2 strength if you want. It can give them reposition, which is huge with crow creators, and the ability to gain tough as well there. So they really give quite a bit to those minions. Along with this, the Willbreaker does quite a bit as well, can give tough, as we went over before. And then Puppet Master's never a bad thing when you're dealing with probably only casting one mortality a turn. And then I have 2 Archidons in the list, a Blind Walker in the list, and a Battle Boar to beef those bad boys up, along with some Beast Handlers.
He also gives the Blood Runners parry.
Yes, yeah, I said that with the...
Which is pretty strong when you're ambushing also, because you can really get into the lines of your opponent.
Right, so you're ambushing, you parry, they have Apparition as it is, they're definitely going to be a backline harassing unit, hopefully trying to push things forward into your 30 guns. Yeah. But they, like I said, their weapons only range 10, so they can, usually what happens with a croak is they go up within range 10, they shoot, they don't kill the thing, that thing kills them back.
Yeah,
with repositioning being 13 inches away really means that there's a good possibility that they won't die as easy. Also, tough on a no knockdown ranged unit is really good with it, and they actually aren't miserable in melee once you get the +2 strength. Between gang and that, they could become a POW 12 charge at mat 7, so they're not too bad along those lines as well. You know, I'm tempted to change up the beast load a little bit though and take a spray hog. I thought maybe it'd be cool with raiders and oil to oil something and then be like, here's a spray hog, and freely boost that spray, since it's a fire spray as one option. I'm not sure if 16 points is worth it over a couple Archidons bouncing around and finishing things off. One of the weaknesses of the Archidon is that it's not the strongest beast ever, so I figured maybe being able to go in, finish something off, lightning strike back, was a strong aspect to it, which is why I was looking at the Archidon.
Yeah, you can also take the Black-Eyed Wrestler just for rage.
Yeah, I ran out of points. That's why I took a Battle Boar instead, but I certainly would like... I think the crux of the list that worries me is there is only one Blind Walker. So you kind of need to protect him to keep him alive for casting mortality. But I think there's one thing about Morgul 2 that's interesting is that he can always do some work himself. Like, he doesn't have to have a lot going on. But we do have 40 infantry models in this list.
That is a bunch.
That is a lot, yeah.
And then just to round off the points, just so you guys know, I had thrown in a couple swamp gobbers as well. So
make him defense 18 against range.
Well, he's got stealth too, so.
Yeah.
Well, people can see through stealth nowadays.
Yeah, to a certain extent. But he's come a long way since his Mark II version.
That he has. So he's quite a bit interesting there. Quite good. And then he's also got Sack Pond as well, so even if they are seeing through the stealth, likelihood is that he's protected by the fact that he's got 30 minion models running around him.
Yeah.
There as well. So
he could also take a Dracodile, which is sweet.
Yeah, he could take a Dracodile. I think there are other options for Dracodile as well. The second caster here, I don't think Adam's choice when he chose Naresh earlier, there's no point in us talking about it again, but Naresh, I think, is probably a good caster
Yeah, I wanted to mention him just for this as a theme. Shout out.
Yeah, I think it's a good shout out. Instead of going with units, though, maybe you go a little heavier on the beasts in this theme. Like I said, Rhinodons look good with them, and Imperial War Host will now take the +3 strength he's getting and add rage to it. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, exactly.
To it. So, there's a lot there, but then I know the one other caster I've been looking at would be Morgul 1. And going a little bit more beast heavy as well with it. So there's definitely a lot you could do there as well.
Yeah, I don't. And then, I mean, you can take Zakar and Morgul 3, but I don't know. I don't know why you'd take those over one of the Morgul 1, 2, or Naresh.
Morgul 3 looks like a poor man's Morgul 2 to me, so I just don't feel like you're ever going to take him. Zakar, I mean, he is the one time that could be possible is he is a champions caster.
Yeah, right now. That's true. Although the outside of champions, though, he again just seems like a slightly worse Morgul too.
I agree. So, but nonetheless, or even I think even more so, maybe a poor man's Naresh there.
Yeah, he's just a worse version of a couple of the cast. Outside of champions, though.
But in champions, right, you don't get a choice. Yeah,
champions, he seems fine.
Of the matter, so. All right. Any more words about Disciples of Agony? I'm hoping to, once some of these big tournaments are over, to get into playing some of those lists. I'm collecting the materials. I almost have them. And I'm pretty much ready to go.
I feel like you can get some definitely interesting combinations. Because it's mixing, like, two factions that you don't see a whole lot together anymore.
Right. Well, the ironic part about this, too, is Scorn always had a Minions feel to it in Mark II. This has brought that back. But a lot of Minion players are super upset. I'm not one of them. But they're super upset by the fact that their beasts are able to be taken by another faction. And I kind of understand it. You buy into the faction, you know your units and solos and stuff are going to be taken elsewhere, just as kind of the nature of the game, especially when they attached mercs and minions to a lot of the theme lists. But the beasts were always safe. They were always ours. They're not any longer. I think that there's some of the beasts are turned on a little bit by this theme where they're helped quite a bit. But truthfully, in a lot of cases, they're still better in minions.
Well, and you should look at it from the reverse perspective, which is that if you play minions now, you're, you know, a unit of beast handlers and a caster and maybe like a support beast or two away from
Castmasters.
Yeah, away, you know, a relatively small investment away from having access to, you know, just something to break up playing minions. You can play a little bit of Scorn.
Yeah, I mean, look at that Morgul 2 list. I could easily take an Archidon and make one of these into another Blind Walker, or take Adam's idea and put a wrestler in or something. And then I've literally added three solos, some beast handlers, and I added blood runners, but you don't even need to do that.
Yeah, and then just you've got a full Scorn list, and then you just go buy yourself 30 immortals and some ancestral guardians, and you're good to go with two lists.
Yeah.
Also, as a minions player, you can always, you know what they're going to do if you see that list.
Yeah.
Kind of know your enemy thing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely interesting. I think it's also interesting for the game because we don't see minions or mercs being taken in this quantity.
I think it's cool to see crossovers like this, and I think it'd be cool to see more.
And we may with something like Crucible Guard, right?
Yeah, I mean, Laylee's Resistance can do it with mercs, you know.
That's like really the only other list, though, that does huge crossovers.
Yeah.
You see a little bit with Cephalix and taking the attachment guy, but
yeah, it's just kind of neat to see, you know,
Old Witch 2.
Breaks up. Yeah, Old Witch 2 to a certain extent.
Yeah. But, like I said, nonetheless, I'm going to throw this list down a bit. We'll see what it is. Maybe it'll just be a fun one here during our game nights to play so that I'm not playing the same tournament list over and over again. Maybe take it to a local steamroller and whatnot. We'll see where my Scorn takes me once I get my lot in. So, but I think we have a podcast, guys.
I think so.
Yeah.
Beautiful. All right, so thank you for listening to Signs of Portents. You can find us at the Muse on Minis Network, or you can like us on Facebook at Signs of Portents, War Machine and Hordes. I do want to just mention that about the Facebook page. We are, speaking of Scorn, we are raffling off a Scorn battle box to get somebody started off with Disciples of Agony, right? Sorry, that's the minion except excited for the car part. Hey, you got to start somewhere, right? With every faction, not to mention there's a gladiator in there as well.
Yeah.
So if you go ahead by the end of March and like us on Facebook, we, if you're in the continental United States, we'll send that to you for free. If you're outside, we'll make a deal with you. That's fine. But definitely like us on Facebook between now and that contest. We'll random number generate to get that battle box out to you guys. And hopefully we can keep this going, and maybe we'll continue to do some various raffles over the next few months.
Sounds good. Well. Yeah.
Great. All right, guys. Thank you. Have a good night.